This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And I've had a lot of fun this week working on technology. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, indeed. I got a new laptop this week.
What did you get?
I got a Sony Vaio with the solid-state drive.
You like it?
So far I like it. I just have had a couple of days. I got this thing because I just got tired of carrying around a heavy laptop. I do so much traveling. So this weighs 2.5 pounds. It actually doesn't have a CD.
Would you hold that up to the microphone so our friends at HGTV can see that?
Yeah, see this?
I didn't realize they were that small. That's nice.
It's a smaller screen because I wanted to go for the lightweight. There's no CD or DVD in this because I don't really watch movies.
Mm-hmm. And then you're all work and no play from what I know of you.
Yeah, that's the problem. Well, I can get Netflix if I want.
What's the other thing
over
there?
Well, the other thing here is my iPad. And of course, I've got the Wi-Fi I've got the Wi-Fi keyboard here.
What, did you just get that?
Well, this was the iPad, of course, that I stole from Marianne. This is the iPad 2. And then I bought her this keyboard for Christmas.
So you could use it with her iPad.
And then I just I've completed the transaction. I've stolen the keyboard.
You completed the theft. I didn't mean to get ahead of you there. Go ahead.
And this is like a little miniature laptop.
So, it is.
So for my last and this Wi-Fi laptop really works well for the iPad. So on my last trip, I didn't even take a laptop with me. I just used this for everything that I needed.
That's really what I'd like to do if I could win an iPad, because I'm not going to spend the money on it right now.
Yeah, see, so I actually, well, now this Bluetooth keyboard, which is a Logitech keyboard, it's made by Zagg, Z-A-G-G, it retailed at $99, I paid $80 for it, and they just had a special selling these things for $35.
You're kidding, where?
I don't know, some online deal that Marianne saw. I don't know where it was.
I hope she's sleeping in that listening.
Yeah, I don't think she'll be sleeping. I don't want to talk about this.
While we're on the iPad real fast, can you run Word documents on an iPad?
I can run this in a thin client mode, and I can log on, and I can get I can get Word in thin client mode.
Okay.
And Microsoft is, in fact, I actually have... Productivity is one of the issues with this.
See, that's my deal.
So actually, okay, well, let's just have a little sideline here.
Since
we're getting into it. So in my business area, I've got Docs to Go, which is sort of like a scaled down Microsoft Office. Now I also got the Apple's version of Office, which is Numbers, that's the spreadsheet, and then you've got Keynote, which is the PowerPoint, and you've got Page, which is the word processor. So I bought Page, Number, and Keynote. They're about, you know, like $10 each.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Docs to Go might have been $15. Then so with those I can use them. And I also got QuickOffice. I'm actually at some point in the future going to compare all of these. I haven't finished my research yet, but these work pretty well. For that, and then of course the issue is where do you save them? Because and so what it is, I've got Dropbox, and these are integrated directly to Dropbox, and so I save the document in Dropbox. I go to my PC, and on my PC I've got the Dropbox folder. It just shows up on my PC.
So if you wanted to put it on a thumb drive or something, you do it that way.
Yeah, and then you just so I've got Dropbox on all the devices that I use. Or if I want to create a document and put it on the iPad, I just drag it into the Dropbox folder. Shows up on my iPad.
Cool. Now iPads do not. Support USB devices, do they?
No, there's no USB.
Mm-mm. That's a problem.
No, you don't. There's no USB, so you communicate with them. Now, what they want you to do, of course, Apple wants you to use the iCloud,
right.
Not Dropbox.
Right.
They want the Apple the Apple Cloud solution, which is iCloud. And so you can also integrate these things with iCloud. Now, I did read that Microsoft was developing Microsoft Office for the iPad. They're actually going to develop it because they realize they can make money on that deal. Yeah. So they are going to do that. But now I'm just, I don't know. And the other thing is that when I travel now, I'm using, sometimes I don't even open the computer because my iPhone has got everything I need. So it's kind of an interesting thing. So,
you know, you got me hooked on this stuff. I was the last guy in the world to get an iPod.
Yeah.
I love it.
Uh-huh.
My iPhone. I'm telling you, there's so much stuff on the phone.
It's going to be not long till you're going to get an iPad.
Yeah, when I win one. Exactly.
And enjoy yourself. Yeah,
when I win.
I've got to admit, I've never purchased.
Oh, you give it to me.
I've never purchased. Marianne's won, too.
I know.
Well, I've never purchased one. No, I did.
As your loyal servant.
I did purchase the iPhone 4S, which is now outdated because the iPhone 5 is out.
And you're going to get a 5?
Yeah, I'll get a 5 as soon as my subscription, you know, as soon as I have to renew.
Oh, gotcha.
But, you know, I got people at Stratford that are strutting around with their iPhones 5 showing off.
And Tech Boy doesn't have one
and
yet.
And Tech Boy doesn't have one. You know, I got. They're two strutting around, and they take it out at the meetings, and they everybody knows they have their iPhone 5.
I'm surprised that Bird hasn't been down here. I'm sure he's got one.
I don't know. He possibly could have one. Well, there is, but I want to talk to him about it if he comes down and see how he's using his iPad too. Because he got an iPad and he gave his first one away.
Yeah, I remember that.
Because he didn't want to pay for the 3G connection.
Mm-hmm.
But you can use just Wi-Fi. You don't have to get a 3G connection on it. So anyway, there's been a lot of stuff going on with viruses going around Skype.
Uh-huh.
Cyber attacks. Yes.
I cut you off on the Vio. Did you want to finish up on that? Or you want to do that later?
The Vio. Okay. Well, what I did with the Vio, I'll finish up. I'll talk about all my toys first.
And then we'll do the mailbag.
You know, this isn't tech talk. This is all about.
It's all about the
me.
Doc.
It's all about Doc. ABD. All about Doc. So I got the Sony Vio, and really it was weight was the issue. I got a 256 gigabyte solid state hard drive. So it's, there's nothing spinning in here. So the battery life is really long.
Wow.
And so I could take this on a if I could take this on a, like, so if I'd won, I could download movies to this. I could watch movies on the airplane. Except actually, I take my iPad with me. And when I'm on the airplane now, I read books.
Mm-hmm.
I love the iPad for reading books on the airplane. It's much better than the Kindle for reading on the airplane.
Yeah.
Because the Kindle, of course, has no backlighting.
Right.
So you have to turn on the light and shine it down on the Kindle.
And that's annoying to everybody.
I know, especially, in the middle of the night. Whereas my iPad, I leave the light off, can sit there and read. I'm just really smug on the airplane while I'm reading that. But this... So I'll take this Vio with me on the next trip. I don't have to carry this giant this giant case with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be easier to unpack it, take it through security. So
sure.
I'm looking forward
That's
to that.
Good.
And normally, I had an old laptop, so normally I'm the last one at the company to upgrade.
That's really funny.
So I have, because I take care of everybody else first, and then Dr. Shirts last,
and I'm still walking around without.
I know.
Stuff.
Well, see, so you can say that you actually are even further behind me.
I am way behind you.
Yeah. So there was, there's some news that people are searching less on the web. By the way, I'll talk about that.
Really?
Google search traffic is down this month.
No kidding.
Yeah, and so this is sort of an indicator of long term trends, and there have been some. Very malicious malware going around through Skype. IM. I'll talk about that. And the man we're going to feature today in Profiles in IT was the man who started MySpace. Sort of MySpace was competing with Friendster. Friendster bit, kicked the bucket. And then MySpace pretty much kicked the bucket when Facebook came along. They still sold MySpace for $560 million. It's not like they didn't get any change out of the deal.
Yeah.
But I'll talk about the guy who was co-founder of MySpace. It's an interesting story. And, of course, here, let me get this. There was a huge, huge mailbag.
Unbelievably big.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Boy, I could barely get it up.
I
could barely get it up on the counter.
Andrew had to get the other end of it.
It was a two-man job. It takes multiple handles now to pick up the mailbag.
And wheels.
Oh, we got an email from Arnie McKechnie. He's one of our regular listeners. He says, "Dear Dr. Shirks, a few programs ago you mentioned that Mary Ann was number one and you were number two. So you have the iPad 2 and she has the iPad 1. Yes.
Exactly.
Exactly.
That's how it works.
That is the logic. Unless nobody fill her in. Now, at least that was...
She can't. There's a cone of silence around your house where 1500 gets blocked out, right?
Exactly.
She can't hear the show there.
Exactly. At least that was the case prior to your Indian and Vietnam trip. Now, I'm not going to go into which iPad she has because that's dangerous turf.
Yes.
Exactly, Arnie. You've got it. Now, just the same, we have iPad 1s, the originals. And the iOS 6 apparently is not applicable to these iPads. That being the case, we receive all sorts of app updates for iOS 6. The question is, do these updates for iOS 6 bypass the original iPads, or do they just go into them and suck up memory? Well, second, I understand that Apple started tracking users so that advertisers can target them through a new tracking technology called IFA or IDFA. Do you have any information regarding this tracking system with iOS 6? I don't know how you get all the detailed information you discuss on Tech Talk, but it's great. It's a super program. Thanks,
that's
Arnie McKechnie.
The doc is special. That's how he gets
exactly.
All this information.
Well, the bad news is, Arnie, that iOS 6 will not work on the iPad 1.
Uh-oh.
Now, please do not let anybody in my household know that.
No.
The good news is that it will not download and install, so it's not going to take any of your memory. I mean, the App Store is smart enough to know not to put an application on your device that it cannot take. Now, you are right about Apple's tricky tracking. On the iOS 6, Apple has started tracking users so that advertisers can target them again through a new tracking technology called IFA or IDFA. You were right about that. Previously, Apple had all but disabled tracking of iPhone users by advertisers when it stopped app developers from using the Apple mobile device data via UDID, which is the device ID. It's a unique, permanent, non-deletable serial number that previously identified every Apple device. So the good news is, Arnie, with iOS 5, you are safe. There is no tracking. However, with iOS 6, that would be on the iPad 2 and 3, as well as the more recent, as well as the iPhone 4 and 5 and 3. However, the iOS 6 tracking has been turned back on the iOS 6, but it can be switched off. I'm going to tell you how to do that.
Okay.
Not you, Arnie, because you
no.
can't download it. Now, IFA or IDFA stands for Identifier for Advertisers. Doesn't that sound ominous?
It does.
Identifier for Advertisers. IDFA or IFA.
I want nothing
to do with it. It's a random, anonymous number that's assigned to the user and their device. It's temporary and can be blocked like a cookie. Advertisers use IFA to deliver relevant ads to your mobile device. So if you're looking around at car dealerships, you'll get a lot of car ads sent to you. If IFA, now the good news is the IFA does not identify you personally. It merely provides a bunch of aggregate audience data that advertisers can track with ads. Now, this is how you disable IDF on iOS 6. Go to Settings, and then go down on Settings, click on General. Then when you bring up the General tab, click on About. Then you scroll down to something called Advertising. Click on Advertising, and there's a choice that says Limit Ad Tracking, and it's initially turned off. Turn it on, and if you limit ad tracking, then IDF or IDFA is stopped. Arnie, that was a great question,
yes.
And I think our listeners did. And in fact, I've already turned off my IDFA. After I did the research on this, I went in and I turned it off on my phone because I don't like people tracking what I'm up to.
Exactly.
Not that I'm up to anything bad. I just don't like the idea.
Of course. Exactly.
We got an email from Alice. Dear Doc, I recently noticed a setting on my desktop, which is running Windows 7 Home Premium Edition, which I don't understand. In the control panel under Power Options, Advanced Settings, Processor Power Management, the system cooling policy. Whew. I don't know why you were looking around there. I think he must have more time, you know, to just sort of scroll around through all the settings.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I have an option of either a passive or an active setting. In the passive setting, it slows down the processor before speeding up the fan. In the active setting, it simply slows down the processor after turning on the fan. And so, you know, so you have a choice of before speeding up the fan. By default, it was set to passive, but it makes more sense to me to set it to active. Well, it's really your choice. It's really your choice, Alice. When the processor works hard, it gets hot, and when it gets hot, it needs to be cooled down. So, you know, so when you start really working your processor, you know, you got some big job going on there, you have a choice. If all of a sudden it begins to heat up, you could actually slow down the processor to cool it down, or you could let it just run full tilt and turn on the fan. But then you've got more fan noise, and so it's kind of a trade-off of what you like. Now, for most things like Microsoft Office or Microsoft Word, it's not going to matter, but there could be some heavy-duty gaming that you're doing. I mean, you might be into this heavy-duty gaming, heavy, heavy graphics usage, and so you may not want the processor to slow down. You just may want to have the fan turned on. So, you know, I don't really think it matters which way you go. If you're just a normal user, I'd just leave it on passive because you'll have less fan noise. But if you're a heavy-duty, hardcore gamer, or you've got something that uses a lot of processing power, I'd switch it to active because you're probably more interested in the game than in the fan noise. It's a good question, but you're really the first person I've ever talked to who's actually gone down into the control panel that far to look at what the options are.
Wow.
We got an email from Kathy. Dear Tech Talk, I opened up the drive directory of a 500-gigabyte external drive and checked the contents and went unable to find the data that's causing the drive to fill it up. It's almost full. It's probably because I've got incremental backup or something. I don't know why it's filling up so fast. I own an HP computer with a 500-gigabyte external drive and an internal drive of 298 gigabytes. I love the show. Thanks, Kathy from Michigan. Oh, she must listen on the to the podcast.
Exactly.
Well, if you're concerned that it's some kind of incremental backup, I think you should review the kind of backups that you have. It's something that you actually configure yourself using whatever backup program you have. So you want to review those settings. But let's assume that for a moment you really don't know what's taking up the space. There's a program called TreeSize, TreeSize, and TreeSize will analyze all the files on your hard drive and to sort them in order of which ones are using the most. So the file that's using the most space will be listed first. And that way you can very quickly see where all your space is being utilized. And if you've got duplicate files because of multiple backups, you'd immediately see that. Now, with that information in hand, you can take the next step to decide what to do. If you discover that your backup program is simply accumulating data, it may be time for you to reconfigure your backup program so that you actually you do your incremental backups, and then when you do a full backup, your incremental backups are deleted. You don't have to store all those backups necessarily, but all of that is sort of backup policy that you set. But it's a good question, and actually, I have to give you congratulations. You are in the 1%.
Whoa.
Of people who actually back up their data.
That would be in the 99%.
You know, maybe that is that the 1% that Obama's always talking about?
Apparently so.
Is that the 1% of those
yes.
who back up their data and the 99% who don't back up their data?
That's me.
Yeah, so congratulations. Congratulations, Kathy. You are in the 1%. We got an email from Knock in Ohio. Now, Knock sends us a lot of emails. Dear Dr. Schertz, I want to move my Gmail. The question is, where, how, and what do I do? I've got thousands of old emails on the web, and they're not on the computer, but I want to move them to another system like Yahoo. A loyal listener in Ohio, Knock. Well, I don't know why you want to move. I love Gmail.
Yeah, me
Knock.
Too.
You know, I don't know why you're transferring them. I mean, it's very difficult to do because Gmail doesn't make it easy to get the emails out of there. Your options aren't very convenient, but it will take a fair amount of time, so... So what you have to do, actually, you've got to put an email client on your computer, and then you're going to have to transfer the emails to the email client on your computer, and then you're going to have to set up another email account like Yahoo, and then you can transfer the files from your email client on your computer to Yahoo. So it's going to be a double-step process, and I'll explain how to do that. First of all, what you want to do, you might want to get an email program like Thunderbird. It's a free download. You could get Thunderbird. And you can then install that on your computer. Then you can set up the IMAP protocol. That's the Internet Message Access Protocol, the IMAP protocol. And using the IMAP protocol, you can download all the emails from Gmail to your machine. You'll leave all your emails will actually be left on the Gmail account, so that'll be unchanged. Then what you do, you take your Yahoo account if that's what you choose. You connect to your Yahoo account using the same IMAP connection, and then you'll have two subdirectories. You'll have your local Gmail subdirectory, and you'll have your subdirectory of your Yahoo account. You simply drag all of the messages from the local subdirectory to the Yahoo subdirectory, and they'll all be uploaded to Yahoo, and you'll have completed that transfer. Now, the one thing you can't transfer that way are your contacts. So what you're going to have to do with Gmail, you're going to have to export your contacts from Gmail, probably in a CSV format. It's a text format, comma to limited format. And then you just export it in that format, and then what you do, then you can import the... Then you can import them in either into your desktop email program, and then you can import them into Yahoo the same way from that file. So that's kind of a double step process. But I would advise you, Nock, to just leave your Gmail account alone because it's a great account. I don't know why you're worried about
it. I love Gmail. It is the best.
It is the best. And I got Gmail when it was first, when it was first a beta.
Uh-huh.
I got it from one of the Gmail employees.
When you had to be invited to get it,
you
right?
You have to be invited. Or in the beginning, they were selling them. Mm-hmm. You know, Gmail employees were selling them. So I wrote to a Gmail employee, and this was when we had these locusts. You know, we had all these locusts.
Yeah.
And my culinary department, had made chocolate covered locusts.
Oh,
and so
God.
And so I put on the website that I was willing to send a gift box of chocolate covered locusts for a Gmail account.
You are strange.
And you know what?
You got
somebody from Google contacted me, and I FedExed the chocolate covered locusts to him, and I got my Gmail account.
That's crazy. The bigger question is, did you try a chocolate covered locust?
No.
I wonder what they taste like.
Because I didn't know which end to eat first.
Oh!
I really didn't.
Pardon me. That was the cold, not the upset stomach.
They were a little crunch. I mean, people were eating them. I mean, it was very popular. They're at the school, but, you know.
What are you doing to these people?
I don't know. I don't know. Why did that come into my head?
We're talking about Gmail.
Yeah.
How you got your account.
That might be it. We got an email from Alex. Dear Tech Talk, I can't copy files from my computer to an external location. I'm using Windows XP Professional and an Intel Pentium 4 processor. The first time I attempt to copy to an external location, I get a dialog box that pops up saying that either the file is already open or the destination is right protected. But I can copy a file to the local hard drive. I'd be grateful if you could help me. Thanks, Alex. Well, it could be that your external hard drive is write protected. That is possible. You can write protect a hard drive, and so you want to check to see whether it's write protected. And how you can check that out is you could say open up something like a small word processor and just try to create a document and save it in it. So if you can't save a file to that hard drive, then it means that it's write protected, and depending on it could be a tab on the drive, or it could be set through software, but you're going to have to then fix that particular write protect. You know, I remember on the old floppy disks, there was something that would slide over, and you could write protect it, and you could slide it back, and it would be write only. So you want it, that would be the first thing. Now, the other thing that could happen would be that if you're trying to copy, say, a file by a particular file that is also on the target disk, and a program has that target file opened. So when you try to overwrite the file when you're copying, it says can't copy it because the file is opened. So see that, and so I don't know, because that message was ambiguous, I don't know really whether you're trying to overwrite a file which is opened or whether it's got write protect. So if a file is opened, you can find out what's holding that particular file open. There's a program that you can use, Process Explorer, and it's a tool, Process Explorer. You can download it, install it. With Process Explorer, it'll tell you which program has that file in use, so that you can close that file and you can override it. But that was a good question. Mm-hmm. I hope that works for you. We got an email from Jim. Dear Tech Talk, I have an unlocked iPhone. Congratulations, Jim. Not everybody does.
Yep.
I have an unlocked one, too.
But you went...
No, I did it legally.
Oh, you did you?
Yeah. Let's see the thing. I was going to try to hack it, but then Marianne just called Verizon, and they unlocked it. It took all the fun out of it, but... So it's been
Such the tech geek. So
Verizon will unlock the iPhone because it's let me finish this email. I'll get into that.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so I frequently travel to India. Can I get a prepaid SIM card with data, or do SIM cards only include voice calls? Thanks, Jim. Well, you can get a SIM card, prepaid SIM card, with or without data, but you got to specify it when you get it. Like, for instance, a new SIM card costs about $10. Now, and you, if you want data, you want to request a SIM card that supports 3G. If it supports 3G, it means it's got a little bit more RAM on the SIM cards for buffering. And for instance, in Mumbai, I looked at a kiosk in Mumbai. They sold SIM cards with 3G specifically included for around 450 rupees. That's around $10, and that includes 600 megabytes of data.
Huh.
Now, you can add a 2 gigabyte data pack for 98 rupees, or about $2. But most SIM cards that people buy are voice only, so you've got to actually specify that you want a 3G SIM card, and then you buy the amount of data that you want, and you buy your minutes, your voice minutes, and your data time separately. So you got to. So usually when I go to India, I have not been getting data SIM cards. I'm just getting voice only SIM cards because I use all the data with Wi-Fi on my iPhone. Now, once you get your SIM card, you've got to activate 3G by dialing 576 pound. Now, the phone kiosk, or a place where you buy the SIM card, can give you all the details on that. Typically, the data plans expire in 1 month, whereas the minutes would go, you know, last longer than that. That was a great question. And let me talk about this iPhone. See, I have I've got Verizon, which is CDMA protocol. But it turns out that the Verizon iPhones also include GSM, which is the other protocol. So I've got both protocols in this iPhone. And so when I'm in the U.S., I use CDMA, of course. But then Verizon unlocked this. So when I go to another country, I can simply pop out the SIM card, put in a local SIM card, and make phone calls for like 2-3 cents a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then I use the data. Then this has got a Wi-Fi on it. So when I'm at the hotel or at the school, at the campus there in New Delhi, I download all my emails through Wi-Fi. So I've got everything I need, and I really don't even need a computer, to tell you the truth. Now let's take in the case of Sprint. That's GSM only. Sprint will unlock your phone if you travel to another country. If, however, you've got AT&T, they will not. So if you go to another country, you've got to get the AT&T plan, which for merely $2 a minute, you can make a phone call.
Forget that.
And they won't unlock it. So there's one. There are a few people at Stratford that've got the AT&T phone.
Mm-hmm.
So when they go to India, you know, I'm able to use my iPhone because it's unlocked. They can't use their iPhone because it's not unlocked. So they've got to get a $20 phone to kind of, you know, and so they're carrying around two phones. It's really too bad. So
it is.
Quite frankly, if AT&T doesn't change their policy, I would dump AT&T because if you're doing much international travel. That was a great question, Jim. And that closes the mailbag.
It's funny about SIM cards. It used to be with any other AT&T phone, if your phone blew up, you could take the SIM card out, put another phone, and you're in business until you. But you can't do that with an iPhone.
Yeah, you can. You can just change the SIM card.
Well, but it becomes if you had two people. Two existing accounts, right? You take somebody else's SIM card, put it in your phone, it becomes their number.
Yeah.
But your data is still on the phone.
Your data is on the phone, but it's their number.
You can't get their data, though. Like,
yeah.
They couldn't access their data, could they?
If they're on the iCloud?
Uh-huh. But you can't get it off the SIM card because the stuff is stored on the phone?
Yeah, the data is on the phone. The data is not in the SIM card.
Right, got it.
But you see now the thing is, though, if they put the SIM card in, if they cannot access your iCloud unless you put in your iCloud. But of course you have the iCloud password, so you've got the phone. So you put their SIM card in; it's their phone number,
and then they can get to the cloud.
And then they could put in their username and password for the iCloud, and then they would synchronize with their iCloud data.
Gotcha.
So it would be like it would then overwrite all of your data.
Gotcha.
You see?
Gotcha.
So you can actually switch it fairly easily. Now, what this locking does, it wouldn't let you, for instance, put in if you've got, say, AT&T SIM card, it would not let you put in a Sprint SIM card, but you could put in another AT&T SIM card.
Got it. But so when you switch back, all their data is you can't. The original person can't view the other person's data after the fact.
Once you synchronize with the iCloud, it's going to overwrite everything.
So your data's gone.
Yeah.
And then when you switch back, what happens?
It would whatever synchronized on iCloud.
Oh God.
See, because it's all you know. You synchronize with iCloud, it deletes what you've got, and then it downloads
so
the other
you,
stuff.
Even
the applications.
You lose applications, photos, all that other stuff gone.
Yeah.
Jeez, that's not good.
Well, actually, if your photos are not in PhotoStream, the photos will stay there. So if you got any embarrassing photos, you may want to delete them before you do this transaction.
No, I just have puppy pictures on my
phone.
Speaking of that, it's funny. This past weekend, we figured out all of the chargers in the house, the iPhone chargers. We thought there was something wrong with the phone because we couldn't get any of the phones to charge.
Mm-hmm.
Dog chewed through each of the chargers enough. That
the dog chewed.
Yeah, shorted them all out.
You know, the iPhone 5 has a new plug, so the iPhone 4 and chargers
won't work with it.
So they make you buy more chargers.
Oh, that's incredible.
It's like a mini plug.
Well,
very good.
Enlightening information.
Yes.
We're way behind. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. More stuff right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Thomas Anderson. Tom, as they say, Anderson, is an internet entrepreneur who co-founded the social networking site MySpace. Tom Anderson was born November 8, 1970. Anderson's father was an entrepreneur. As a teenager at San Pasqual High School in Escondido, California, Anderson was a computer hacker who operated under the pseudonym Lord Flathead.
Nice.
Lord Flathead. Anderson studied English and rhetoric. English and rhetoric at the University of California, Berkeley, after which he was a lead singer in a band called Swank. So he had an
interesting past.
Lord Flathead as a hacker, then a English and rhetoric, and a lead singer in a band called Swank. He spent some time in Taiwan before returning to the U.S. to study for a degree in critical film studies at the University of California, Los Angeles. You know, he just doesn't sound like a techie, does he? But he sounds like a creative kind of guy. Because he was a hacker. This was in the, born in the 70s, so he's probably hacking in the 90s. So he was, you know, he was one of the early hackers. He's probably one of the hack boys, you know. So he was a product tester and copywriter at a company called xDrive. It was a digital storage company in 2000, and that's where he met the guy that he co-founded MySpace with, Chris DeWolf. Now, he initially joined xDrive after answering a flyer advertisement while he was still at film school and looking for a way to earn extra money. And his mom probably worried about him going, getting this degree in film and then working for some IT company. When XDrive went bankrupt in 2001, he and his friend DeWolf founded a direct marketing company called ResponseBase. They sold ResponseBase to Brad Greenspan's eUniverse company in late 2002. With other eUniverse employees, Anderson set up the first pages of MySpace in August of 2003. He founded the site partly in reaction to Friendster's policy that blocked accounts that did not use real names.
Mm-hmm.
See, all of a sudden Friendster got, you had to have a certain look, you have all these rules. And I think he was kind of counterculture, didn't like all those rules. So they just set up a site that didn't have any rules. Anderson and DeWolf invited local bands because it turns out on Saturday nights they used to go to all the clubs and listen to bands. So they invited all the local bands and club owners to post pages on MySpace. And they allowed other users to become their friends. So they sort of got started through the entertainment groups, sort of getting entertainment people on that. He hated the idea of rules. So Anderson and DeWolf insisted on building an open site, which gave the users kind of free-form pages. They could look any way they would want. They could have fake names. I mean, you could impersonate anything. They didn't validate anything because they just wanted people to be able to have fun in the social networking site. Well, this openness on the site, sort of scared investors because they went and looked at it, and many of these pages that the users created were so ugly. The investors said, "You're never going to make any money on that," so they couldn't get any money. But fortunately, eUniverse, where they were working, hired a new CEO, Richard Rosenblatt, who loved social networking, so he invested in MySpace. And he was the first investor. I think he put in $4 million. MySpace ultimately became one of the most popular social networking websites in the U.S. Anderson became president of Intermix Media, which was the successor of eUniverse, when it was sold to News Corp for $580 million.
Whoa.
That's not bad.
It's not chump change.
Now, here's the thing. Friendster eventually just died a slow death, and MySpace took off. But Anderson had trouble delegating, and he became a bottleneck to further development. You know, when you've got companies, they sort of are in the startup phase, then they're in the growth phase, and then they get it sort of the mature phase. So it takes different skill sets as you move up. So he had kind of the start phase mentality, but he had trouble transitioning to the growth phase. He didn't have the right CEO skill set, so he was unable to delegate. He became a bottleneck, and the site became stagnant. He was replaced as president by News Corp in April of 2009. The other thing that was kind of a misconnect, I guess. News Corp, this is Murdoch's organization.
Exactly.
They own Fox News. I mean, it's kind of a stodgy organization, and MySpace was kind of hip, into it and all. And I think there was a culture clash, and actually I think News Corp was the wrong purchaser. I'd say the News Corp structure and discipline and probably killed MySpace. And ultimately, what really killed MySpace was Facebook. Facebook, because Zuckerberg did have a different CEO set. He was able to set up, as I talked about last week, a hacker environment, and he never did sell out. He was able to maintain and control the structure of Facebook as it grew. So ultimately, Facebook beat out MySpace. In 2010, Anderson was no longer the default friend on MySpace. He was replaced by Today on MySpace, or the acronym Tom. In late May of 2012, Anderson announced he would be joining Rocket Frog Interactive as advisor to a 16-person Los Angeles company. Rocket Frog has created a Facebook app that allows users to play poker, blackjack, and a variety of other games with friends. On his various websites, Anderson claims that he's now retired,
mm-hmm.
and he loves to travel. He's got all kinds of great travel pictures. He's got a Google Plus account, which is It says, which is plus MySpace Tom. Plus got, it's a, that's the name of it, plus MySpace Tom. And he's got a MySpace page, which is MySpace.com/Tom. So you can go and check out what he's doing. It's an interesting guy, very good at startup. But this is a case where if you have the wrong CEO, the company ultimately fails, and they were beat out by a better CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, in Facebook. So there you go. Everything you want to know about Tom Anderson.
Well, I sure hope you're paying attention to that, because within mere seconds, you will have a chance to win free food from us, and we're usually pretty tight-fisted around here.
That's
so
right.
Stay tuned. The pop quiz is next on Federal News Radio on Tech Talk on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, five of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Those of you who have been paying attention over the last few weeks know this is a classroom of the airwaves.
Few years,
right. Actually, since 2000.
Yeah,
classroom of the airwaves. And That means if you attend class, you've got to be tested.
Because we tested for what?
We have to test it for knowledge.
Oh, okay.
It's not that kind of class.
Like rabies or something?
Yeah, it's not that kind of class. Earlier in the show, and if you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you'll get two tickets to fine dining, either the Scoffier Dining Room or the Karem Dining Room at the, when is it Falls Church, when is it Woodbridge?
Mm-hmm.
Earlier in the show, I was talking about Thomas Anderson, known by his friends as Tom, who co-founded the social networking site MySpace. What was his pseudonym in high school when he was a computer hacker? What name did he go by as a computer hacker in high school?
Well, in order to win the prize and answer the question, you've got to get the answer to us. And the way to do that is by using your telephone. If you're calling from west of Escondido, California, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of Falls Church, it's 877-936-9333. And the wild card line is 877-936-9333.
If you're calling from Nairobi,
you can
use Skype. Simply go to Tech Talk Radio 1 and connect to that contact. And when you make that phone call, it'll be forwarded directly to the studio.
Professor Andrew Mitchell, adjunct professor for support services.
Yes.
He is manning the phones right now.
That's right. Well, you know, while we're waiting for the phone lines to fill up, search traffic is trending down. It's kind of interesting. Nearly the total core organic searches declined 4% year over year. This last year. So, since they've been tracking it starting in 2006. This marks the first year-over-year decline that we've seen. Now, the growth rates have been slowing down, and people have predicted that this would occur someday, but it finally did occur. The reason for this, even Steve Jobs predicted this at the D8 conference in 2010. Now, people have predicted that this would happen because people are not doing so much search from their websites. Now they're using mobile apps, and they're searching through apps rather than through search engines. Now, like, for instance, people might use Yelp to look for a restaurant instead of searching for a restaurant through Google. And, you know, one of the tools that I use for researching for Tech Talk is Flipboard.
Mm-hmm.
So Flipboard is on my iPhone, and I've put in all the topics that I'm interested in, and Flipboard goes all around the internet, locates topics for me, and I flip through these stories. And I can actually sit any time during the week and do research on Tech Talk with Flipboard. And so, and then I just mail the contact to myself. So now most of my research for Tech Talk is done during the week on my iPhone using Flipboard.
This is revolutionary. Now you don't have to get up at 2 o'clock on Saturday morning, 2:35.
I still have to do that because I have to get the hottest profile in IT guy, which is always a big project. And besides, I just have to do things at the last minute.
Yeah, I understand, Mr. Procrastination.
I know I can't. I can't help it. But this is good for people like Amazon, Yelp, and eBay because they have kinds of commercial searches that people use. Now, Google is not so bad off because actually they created the Android system, so they're positioned to capture app searches through the Android, which was a very strategic move for Google. On the other hand, Yahoo is really in deep trouble because all of their revenue is search. So Apple's in great shape because they sell apps.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a great it's a major shift as we go more and more to apps and less to free form searches on the web. Interesting trend.
It is. Okay, let's go to the lines. We have people. Oh, wait a minute, that's the wrong music. Let's do this one instead. Okay, we're going to go to my hometown of Towson, Maryland, for somebody I've never seen on the line here before. This is Rick calling from Towson, Maryland. Rick, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you, Jim?
Rick, good. Go ahead, Doc, and ask the question.
Yes, earlier in the show, we talked about Tom Anderson, the co-founder of MySpace. What was his pseudonym when he was a computer hacker while in high school?
That would be Lord Flathead.
That is correct.
Rick, congratulations.
Yes.
You're a winner.
You win two tickets to Fine Dining, the Scoffier Dining Room, or Karim Dining Room.
Have you been listening to us for long, Rick?
Just a few weeks.
Really? Are you listening over the air on 1500 AM?
Yes, on a little portable handheld radio.
Excellent.
Radio.
I used to, when I was growing up, I listened to this very radio station in my mom's basement in Towson, Maryland. Very good. Thank you for listening. Rick, stand by. Professor Mitchell will be right with you. We will be right back in just a moment. This is Tech Talk Radio on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Tech Talk continues right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. There's a Skype instant messenger worm that is spreading the installation of ransomware.
Didn't you just tell people to get on Skype?
Yeah, I did. Uh-huh. But I didn't tell them to get on Skype Instant Messenger.
Oh, okay.
Now, a malicious worm is spreading through Skype Instant Message, which threatens to take control of the victim's machine and hold its contents for ransom.
Beautiful.
It's called ransomware. The issue was first brought to light last Friday by GFI. It tricks users into downloading a zip file by displaying a social engineered message, which is this: LOL, is this your new profile pic?
Jeez.
Laughing out loud, LOL, is this your new profile pic? Along with a link that spreads the message to other Skype users. So people get this. So if you get an IM that says, LOL, is this your new profile pic, delete it. Don't click on the link. The zip file contains an executable file that installs a variant of the Dorkbot worm, and it creates a backdoor via the black hole.
Mm-hmm.
It's an explicit kit used by criminals to infect computers through security holes. The backdoor allows a remote user to take control of the machine and install ransomware, a malicious application that locks the user out of the computer via password or encryption and demands a payment or ransom in exchange for the content. This particular strain demands a payment of $200 within 48 hours or risk of having their files deleted.
Wow.
Yeah, the malware also employs click fraud. It imitates legitimate user behavior by clicking on ads that generate revenue for its authors. It's not really a few clicks. GFI said that in a 10-minute span, this particular program sent out 2,200 fake clicks so they could generate money for somebody.
Crazy.
Skype has said it's investigating the matter and recommends upgrading the Skype version and make sure that your machine security software is up to date. But do not click on a message that says, LOL, is this your new profile pic? How close is online voting? You know, we've been talking about that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're sort of getting into the thing here. Because you can do basically everything online. You can buy pizza online. You can buy shoes online. You buy books online. You buy pretty much everything except voting online.
Steal money online like the last guys.
Yeah. Now, according to verifiedvoting.org, a nonprofit organization dedicated to ensuring accuracy, integrity, and verifiability of elections in the digital age, all voting systems should have three components: a fully auditable, preferably voter-verifiable paper trail that maintains the integrity of the secret ballot, strong mechanisms to prevent any undetected voter changes in votes. The system should not easily be subject to wide-scale service disruptions. The We Help America Vote Act, HAVA, passed in 2002 as a response to the Florida recount debacle of 2000. Remember the hanging chads?
Mm-hmm, right.
require some of these provisions under the law. Verify.org board member David Jefferson told attendees at the RSA Security Conference in March that the very concept of internet elections is broken. First of all, it's difficult to maintain an audit trail. Online voting critics argue that the paper record is the most reliable way to ensure votes can be verified. And verified.org says that creating a reliable audit trail while maintaining a secret ballot is an unsolved problem. Because if you want to have an audit trail so you can document that this person voted that way, you've lost the secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
So secrecy is sort of the means that you really can't have an audit of a remote vote. That's one major problem. Voting systems must have a mechanism for detecting changes to votes. Now, online voting critics have all kinds of horror stories. You know, in the case of Cabot County, North Carolina, an unanticipated memory limitation on an electronic voting machine caused the system to simply stop counting votes.
Jeez.
But almost 4,500 votes were lost before anybody noticed. I mean, that's a problem. In 2010, a D.C. pilot program test, a team of computer security students from University of Michigan were able to hack into the system and not only change the results, but the actual choices displayed on the screen. It's also much easier to hack into a broadly used system that and alter thousands of votes than it is to counterfeit thousands of paper ballots. And so these nightmare scenarios are problems, and it's difficult to protect against it in the case that you have a voting system hack. Voting systems must also not be subject to wide-scale service disruptions. We know that if you got an internet access, distributed denial-of-service attacks could block everyone. And if Anonymous, for instance, that hacker group, could someday want to impact a major election via distributed denial-of-service, they could do that. Malware is always a problem. As many as 48% of computers in the United States may have malware infected. And malware, in fact, could be installed on a computer that you use to vote. It could make the user think that he's casting a ballot for one candidate, but actually send in a vote for another candidate.
Jeez.
See, there are all kinds of problems that this is coming along. But despite these concerns, internet voting is coming eventually, mm-hmm. but there are just a lot of barriers. It would be naive to think that internet voting isn't coming. Proponents of online voting point to the number of reasons to embrace the technology. Online voting systems are by their nature more accessible. They make it difficult to suppress votes. Military and overseas voters could specifically benefit from the ease of use and accessibility of online ballots. But then you've got the problem of people from other countries voting fraudulently. I mean, all kinds of issues could come up here. So widespread online elections will be a reality sometime in the future, but we need to make sure that when the day arrives, everyone in the U.S. can vote online and make certain that it's secure and foolproof. There should be national standards in place, and vendors should be forced to share their best practices with one another. There should also be mandatory that vendors make their code available for peer review. Open source would be very good. So online voting isn't near, but it is inevitable. But there are a lot of issues that we have to overcome.
We're just going to stay here, Doc. Go ahead.
We're just going to stay here. Okay. Iran seems to be behind the cyber attacks in Saudi Arabia, as you would expect. Now, it turns out that the Russians and the Chinese are probably the best hackers in the world, and we figure, you know, Iran is kind of just getting started in this thing, but they finally got hit the big time doing some major cyber attacks. The U.S. believes that Iran is behind a major cyber attack on Aramco and Qatari gas firm. These are Saudi firms, according to a former U.S. official. In a major cybersecurity breach last Thursday, Defense Secretary Leon Panetta issued a veiled warning to Tehran that Washington is ready to take preemptive action to protect U.S. computer networks. U.S. government agencies have concluded that Iran orchestrated the Shamoon virus.
Ooh.
Shamoon virus that disabled tens of thousands of computers in Saudi Aramco and struck Qatari natural gas firm RasGas as well. American officials had more than suspicion that Iran was to blame for the August attacks, and also probably included a recent denial of service attack on some U.S. banks. In his speech, Panetta referred to Shamoon virus for the first time publicly, saying it had erased critical files on about 30,000 computers in Saudi's Aramco, the world's largest oil company. Shamoon virus wiped out crucial files and replaced them with images of burning American flags. Two weeks after the August 15th cyber attack on Saudi Aramco, the company announced it had restored its main internal network and the assault had not disrupted oil productions. The Pentagon chief also spoke of foreign actors probing sensitive U.S. networks, cited denial of service attacks on some large financial companies. While he reiterated the U.S. concerns about cyber threats from Russia and China, he said that Iran is building up digital capabilities quickly. Panetta said that the United States has improved its ability to track the origins of digital attacks and suggested the military stood ready to take preemptive action in cyber attacks. I think this gives an indication that this is a great career strategy for someone.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of opportunity in security now because we've got cloud processing, we've got mobile devices in the workplace. So the dynamics of computer networks and computer devices is changing quite dramatically. NIST is coming up with new standards for this kind of security. But this is a huge opportunity for people who would like to get a job. They can look at the security standards that NIST has published. They publish all the government standards. And you can check on some of the security work. You can get some security certifications. You can be right in track. Listen, we love you listening to Tech Talk. Simply go to stratford.edu, check out our programs, and let them know that you heard about Stratford on Tech Talk.
That's right. And if you like listening to this show, you can hear it again at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Of course, go to Tech Talk Online and access all of our shows there.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
Well, the Washington Nationals season came to a screeching halt last night, of course, losing in the ninth inning to the Cardinals 9-7. We've got NBA action here tonight. The Washington Wizards travel to take on the Cleveland Cavaliers. That all starts at 7:30. The InstaWeather, or the forecast, is calling for sunny with nice conditions today, high of 61. It is currently 46 at 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers. As indicated, Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no